The sixth principle is called connect to your divinity with unconditional love. And the affirmation for this is I express the energy of unconditional love to all people and all things in my life. Connect to your divinity with unconditional love. The emphasis is on the un. There are no conditions. That the force that we're speaking about here in this program is the force of love. Another word for God is love. Another word for this divine energy, this universal intelligence, is love. Love is the glue that holds everything together. It's the energy within every cell that allows it to stay in place. If you take an electron microscope and you artificially begin to manipulate the electrons inside of an atom, and you align a certain number of them, when you reach a certain critical mass number, 1/3, 1/10, whatever that number might be, all of a sudden, all the rest of those electrons within that atom automatically align. They just line up with each other. That force, when you reach a critical mass within an electron, within a subatomic particle, within a molecule, within an atom, within each and every one of us, is this force that Pierre Teilhard de Chardin of Chardin said is the glue that holds everything together in the universe. And being able to do your manifesting requires this kind of commitment to this. I think the most beautiful passage in the entire New Testament is Corinthians 13. I'd like to share it with you. It's something that I read every day. I use it in my talks most of the time. And it really is reflective of how important this principle is. It says these words, "If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and I can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrong. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when perfection comes, the imperfect disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. Now we see but a poor reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love." It seemed to me, as I was writing Manifest Your Destiny and as I was preparing myself for this program, that it would be impossible to not include the necessity of experiencing unconditional love, even if you just did it for a day, in order to be able to understand its relationship to manifesting. You see, the force that is universal, the force that is divine, the force that we call universal intelligence, the God force that is in all things, is love, which means that you, when you remove yourself from love, remove yourself from the God force, from God, from this divine energy. So that thoughts that you have that take you away from love, thoughts of judgment, remember, it does not judge. It does not keep record of wrongs. It bears no anger, no hatred. This is a very tough thing for those of us who are rooted in the physical domain. To begin to practice this idea of living unconditional love in our lives, it requires removing judgment from ourselves. The thing that is the source of most difficulties in most relationships is this statement that if only you were more like me, then we would be getting along a whole lot better right now. See, if what you think about is what expands, and what you're thinking about is what's missing or what's wrong or what you don't like or what is evil or what is bad in another person, then the relationship has to take that tact, that road, that path. It has to. Because what you think about is what expands. As you think, so shall you be. If you're thinking about what you don't like, then what you don't like is what will expand. So it really requires, if you want to be able to manifest love in your life, or loving relationships in your life, or peace in your life, you have to shift your thoughts to unconditional love. Even when people are behaving in ways toward us that we find offensive. I've often used the metaphor in my talks and some of even my earlier programs of the orange. If I had an orange up here and I were to take that orange and I were to squeeze that orange as hard as I could squeeze it and ask you what will come out, you would say orange juice. And if I said, why, when you squeeze an orange as hard as you can squeeze it, does orange juice come out? You'd say, well, it's an orange. That's what's inside. And if I said, well, does it matter who squeezes it or what instrument you use or what time of day or what the conditions are, you'd say, that's all irrelevant. None of that makes any difference. What the circumstances are, what time of day it is, who does it, when you squeeze an orange, you get what's inside, orange juice. And now if you extend that metaphor to yourself and someone squeezes you, someone puts pressure on you, someone says something about you that you find offensive, and out of you comes anger and hatred and bitterness and tension and fear and anxiety and stress and an absence of what you'd like to manifest, because you can't manifest with those things. They are blockages to the flow of divine love and the universal God force. It isn't because of who did the squeezing. It isn't because of who said what they said. It isn't because of the instruments that they used or the timing. It's because that's what's inside. So how does it get inside? How does orange juice get inside an orange? I don't know. It's one of those great mysteries like the plum. It's just, you give God the credit, you enjoy the oranges, and you move along. But how anger and hatred and tension and bitterness and fear and anxiety and stress and an absence of what you want to manifest shows up in your life is because of how you choose to process the world and how you choose to make the pictures in your mind, the visualizations, the images in your mind, which literally are what cooperates with this divine energy, with this divine force. So your pictures, your inner pictures of what you want to manifest, if they are tainted by anything other than unconditional love, as it shows up, you inhibit that manifestation process. You stop it cold. You can prophesy, you can have knowledge, you can do all of, have all of these great things, and as it says in Corinthians, it will perish. If you have knowledge, it will be stilled. If you have prophecies, they will go away. What it's saying there is, you have a body, and that body will disappear. And all that you know and experience in the physical domain will also disappear. But love never does, because love and God, love and divine essence are exactly the same, and they are unconditional. You have to have the same love for God or for this divine essence that it has always had for you. Through the worst of your days, through the lowest points in your life, this love has always been there. It's available to you. You could take it at any time. You're never turned away. And it's a supply that's inexhaustible. You can't exhaust it. You can't make it go away. It is there. So there is a power in unconditional love that is very difficult for most of us to grasp. I don't know if you've ever been around a being who lives and experiences unconditional love. But when you are, you discover that the energy that they radiate is infectious, like being in a room with Mother Teresa, just being in her presence. They said of Jesus, they said of Buddha, that when they would go into a village, just their presence in the village, nothing more, just their presence in the village would change the consciousness of those around them. From the perspective of having this divinity within you, which is a love for what is going to manifest, what happens when you start picturing your world this way is that your life starts to change. What changes is you feel more peaceful. Love and peace, unconditional love and peace, really go hand in hand. And when you get this quality, and what I suggest to you here is that in order to practice this, to understand that you sleep better, you eat better, you automatically begin to take better care of your body. Toxins are no longer that important to you. Exercise becomes something that you just absolutely do because you're treating your body with unconditional love. And it demands that, it encourages that, it wants that. It doesn't want to be dreary. It doesn't want to be overweight. It doesn't want to be drugged up. It doesn't want to be lethargic. It wants to be flowing because the universal energy that makes the whole thing work flows. It doesn't stop. That energy isn't stopping. It's not stagnant. It's a flowing. When you start doing these things and these changes start taking place, what happens is also the prosperity that you thought you couldn't have also begins to flow. You've stopped all blockages. And while this just sounds like, oh yeah, but I don't have to do anything, you will do something. You will act upon this unconditional love. It's like go on a program for 3 days. Make a 3-day program in which you are going to communicate with your spouse, your lover, one of your children, a friend, a coworker, a boss, someone that you are close to. And every thought that you are going to have directed at that person is going to be one of unconditional love. No matter how crappy they may act, no matter how much complaining they may do, no matter how much you find them to be irritating or whatever, you are going to respond with unconditional love. Not gushy, oh, isn't that great, you're throwing up on me again. Not that at all. But just the thought, the absence of judgment, the absence of anger, the absence of the ego demand that says, you know, you should really be like I am. You're wrong and I'm right. You just let go of that. Try it for 3 days. A 3-day program of unconditional love. And watch what happens to your energy level. And watch what happens to the things that you want to manifest in your life. And begin to notice how you're sleeping and what the content of your dreams are. And notice how other people begin to treat you. You see, unconditional love is joy and it's also power. There's an enormous power, but it's not the power that is an investment in having power over others. It's a power of being able to tune in finally to the thing that makes the whole universe work. What do you think keeps this whole planet from falling off into an abyss? What do you think it is that keeps your shoulder from falling off? What do you think it is that keeps the cells of your eyeballs in their sockets? There's a force, there's an energy, there's something that is working that keeps everything in place, that makes it all work, that makes it all flow. You finally begin to tune into that. You start to trust your nature more than you trust your intellect, which is your ego. Your nature knows how to work. It knows how to make your body work. Your nature knows exactly how many nutrients to send to all the different organs of the body. You don't have to think about that every time you eat something. It's working. Your nature knows how much oxygen to take in and how much to let out. You don't need a formula for that. Your intellect says that water there can't possibly be made up of two parts of hydrogen and one part of oxygen. Those are gases. Your intellect says there's no way. But nevertheless, it is, isn't it, as we examine it. So your nature works perfectly in perfect harmony, as does everything else that keeps the oceans from tilting on their side and having tidal waves. This nature of yours that you are in, that is in you, that you are not separate from, is flowing. It's perfect. It's unconditional. It doesn't judge. It doesn't ask anything. It just flows. It's everything that I read there in Corinthians 13. Be that, and the rest of this will fall right into place. It's astounding how powerful this unconditional love is. I want to tell you a story as you think about this force and picturing and putting yourself in a perspective of unconditional love, which is an absence of judgment, an absence of anger, an absence of telling yourself that someone ought to be like you. And I want to tell you how it has worked for me. One of the things I have known in my life in recent years is that it's important for me to get my ego out of what I do and how to go about doing that, which is to take my attention off of the outcome and what's in it for me and how much I'm going to get and put it more on serving and stop being so concerned with how much comes to me and how much approval I get and how much money I get and all of the things like that, and to just stay more centered on what it is I'm about. And I picked up a story last Christmas morning, a newspaper. And my daughter Tracy and my wife Marceline were there, and I read this story, and the story said, woman spends her 27th year in a coma. And I read this story, and it was a story of a woman named Kay O'Bara and her daughter Eduarda O'Bara. The story went on to say that in 1970, on January the 3rd, this young girl who was 16 years of age slipped into a diabetic coma at about 4 o'clock in the morning. She had been given oral insulin as an adolescent, and called diabetes, and it wasn't metabolizing with her, and she wasn't getting the insulin. It wasn't going into her bloodstream. And she woke up in this, she was just shaking and in great, great pain, and they rushed her to the hospital. And as she was on the hospital bed, her mother went there with her in 1970. Eduarda, the young girl, who was a senior in high school at the time, said to her mom, "Mom, you won't leave me, will you, Mommy?" And she had never called her mommy before. She had always called her mom or mother. And Kay said to her, "I will never leave you, I promise. And a promise is a promise." And that was in 1970. Well, 27 years later, Kay has been feeding Eduarda every 2 hours for 27 years. Imagine yourself never being able to sleep in a bed for 27 years. At 2 a.m., 4 a.m., 6 a.m., 8 a.m., getting up every night, sleeping in a chair next to your daughter. Imagine yourself never going to a mall or going to a movie. And imagine yourself being drained financially by medical bills alone that number now $3,000 a month just for the medication, with an income of $1,100 a month. And imagine yourself also every 4 hours, 24 hours a day, 6 times a day, having to take a blood sugar reading and then administer insulin based upon the reading, 6 times every day. And imagine yourself coming home from that hospital bed. This woman was a school teacher, a mathematics teacher and physics teacher down in Miami. And she came home 4 months after the onslaught of the coma because they no longer could afford to stay in the hospital. Their insurance had run out long ago. They were now borrowing money. And then imagine 4 years later, the husband having a conversation with you, saying, "I can no longer stand to see myself standing by, watching while our finances are drained, and I can't do anything for my daughter. I'm going to go to heaven and work from there. And the next day, dying of a massive heart attack at the age of 49. And then when that happened, the other daughter, Eduarda's sister, becoming a crack cocaine addict and living on the street and having her only little baby being raised by a K as well. Losing your husband, your daughter to a coma, your other daughter to the streets, and still every 2 hours, 24 hours a day, 27 years, feeding and taking care of this child. This is the story of Kay O'Bara. And I read that story and I was astounded by this kind of unconditional love. And I said to Tracy over and over again, I said, I just can't fathom how somebody could take a quarter of a century and more and have this kind of devotion. And I took a copy of one of the books I wrote a couple of years back called Real Magic, which is a book about miracles. And I wrote in that book, "You are my hero." And I sent Kay a check. I thought that I was then done with it, which is, it was a very touching story, but it was still sort of tugged at my heartstrings. And I went away in January to write this Manifest Your Destiny book. And while I was there, I turned on the TV for the only time I had it on while I was there one evening after I had completed writing about unconditional love. This principle that I'm sharing with you here. And on the TV, there was a show called Inside Edition. And Deborah Norville was the hostess, and she came on and said, and I know Deborah, I've been on the air with her, and I admired her a great deal. And she said, there's going to be someone on the show that's very special later, a mother whose daughter's been in a coma for almost 27 years. You'll want to stay tuned. And I thought, wow, that could only be the lady, because I didn't even remember her name that I had written to back at Christmas. And sure enough, they open up the TV show with her reading to Eduarda from Real Magic that I had sent to her. And I thought, something is happening here. Something is happening here. And I thought, when I get home, I am going to look up that woman and find out if I can get her phone number and maybe call her and see if there's anything more that I can do, because I was so touched by that. And when I got home in February, after writing, picked up my mail, and I had a huge stack of mail, and on the top of the mail stack was a letter from Kay O'Bara, thanking me for the check I had sent and for the book and asking me if I would please come down. Well, my wife and I went down to see Kay and Eduarda. And when we went to Kay's house down in Miami, about 40 miles from our home, walked into Eduarda's room, a room filled with angels and relics and all kinds of spiritual literature and music and... Just, it was like we knew we were in a holy place. And as I talked to Kay and told her how touched I was by her unconditional love, her display of unconditional love, I had to fly away a couple of days later and go out to the West Coast, California, out into California. I had to do a show out there, a politically incorrect show. And I did the show, and when I was coming back after doing the show, my wife called and she said, you know, Oprah Winfrey is going to be taping a show on people in comas, and they would like you to be at her home tomorrow, if that's possible. And I said, well, I'm not flying back till tomorrow. She said, well, maybe you could fly on the all-nighter, the red-eye, and get in the morning. And I said, all right, I'll do it. And I flew home, and I went there, and they taped during the day. They came to her home. And while I was there, I talked a little bit about... who I believed this person to be, who was doing her holy work from this place. And then the show aired. And the show was about people in comas, but it was focused on this policeman in Tennessee who had been in a coma for 9 years, and then he suddenly awoke, and he just began talking after 9 years, and it was considered to be a miracle. And they had his brother and some other people on the show, and then they had some other people who had been in a coma but had come back, but they weren't the same as they were before the coma. And the focus of the show was mostly on how tough it was, what a struggle this was, and it's not easy on the rest of the family and so on. And then Kay came on the show. And Kay is the most uplifting and dynamic and positive and joyful person. And she said, this is not a chore. This is an honor. And when she was asked, well, why do you do this? She said, well, God asked me to do it. And God never gives you any more than you can handle. She said, I only asked for two daughters. I didn't ask for them to be anything special, anything unique. I just asked for two daughters. And I take care of her, and I am honored to serve her in this way. And she is fed through a tube. She has brain activity. She was 27 years ago in what is called a stage one coma, which is one in which they had to tape her eyes shut because her coma was so deep. And today, more than a quarter of a century later, when I had my other children come down and sing to her, and Serena sat up there on the bed with her and held her hand, this was Easter Sunday, and I said, we have to go now. Grandma's coming over, and we have to get home now. And she turned her head, and a tear came down her eye. And the last time that I was in her presence, which was not more than a few days ago, when I walked in after having been gone during the summer, she smiled in recognition. She's in what is now called a stage 9 coma. Whether she's coming out or not, we don't know. But 5 years ago, Kay told me what happened in confidence. She said, it was 1991, and it was in October, and I woke up to give her 4 o'clock feeding, because she only sleeps for 45 minutes at a time in a chair. And she said there was a bright light in the room. And I thought someone was there to harm Eduarda, because people have driven by her home and shot bullet holes into their walls saying, we're going to put her out of her misery. There's that kind of consciousness that is out there. And one interviewer said, isn't your daughter a vegetable? And she said, I've never seen a vegetable smile, have you? So she saw this light back in the room when she was preparing the food to go into the tube that feeds her. And she walked back there very quickly, and there, standing at the foot of the bed, was an apparition whom she later identified as the Blessed Mother, Virgin Mary. And she began to talk after her initial fear and said, was told that your daughter is a blessed one. And she said, well, why is she in a coma? And Kay told me that the Blessed Mother had told her that your daughter is a victim soul, and you'll have to find out what that means yourself, so you'll know. And she called the different priests and the different places in the Catholic Church hierarchy, and none of them had ever heard of that. And then she called a cardinal, and the cardinal said, where did you hear this term? And she said, well, I'd really rather not say, because she didn't want to be perceived as being nutsy and crazy and so on, talking to ghosts. And the cardinal said, well, this is a term that goes back to antiquity. And a victim soul is someone who deliberately takes on suffering as their purpose in being here in order to teach compassion or to teach love or to teach peace. Very much like Gandhi did during the rioting in the 30s and 40s when he would fast to the point of dying as long as there was some violence. And he was willing to take that on rather than to allow that to continue. And we all know, of course, of the great tradition of Christianity, of taking on suffering so that the rest of us might be freer people. And when I interviewed Kay about Eduarda, I asked her, what was Eduarda like? And I asked her classmates, and I asked her sister and her relatives, and everyone that I asked said the same thing, that Eduarda was like a saint when she was a little girl. If she saw someone who was hungry, she would give them her allowance. If she saw someone who was cold, she would take her sweater off and give it to them. She studied the saints, carried books about the saints with her wherever she went. She didn't know how to judge anyone. And I went home, and I was doing my meditation, and I thought, what can I do? What is the message here? Why am I so attracted to this? And in my meditation, I said, I'm going to write her story, and I'm not going to take any money for it. Just like I appeared on Oprah with her for the first time when there was nothing in it for Wayne Dyer. And even though I was only on a minute or so of that show, it was one of the most fulfilling things I'd ever done, because I knew it wasn't for my own ego, but in the name of serving. And I called Kay and I said, I would like to write your story, and I'll donate all the royalties to you, to the Eduarda Obera Fund. And we'll sell 1 million of these, and we'll get you out of debt because she has this onus of debt around her neck. $300,000+ worth. What she has done is had made baked goods and has done cookbooks and has done celebrity auctions and has borrowed from here, has had 35 to 37 different credit cards going at one time and having to borrow from loan sharks and being threatened, all just to keep this thing going because there's been no other way to make it work. And her debts are huge. I said, I know I can remove that. And she said, you know, Doc, it's funny that you called because the Blessed Mother said that the right angel would show up and would tell the story with dignity, the way it needs to be told. I said, well, the only thing I can say, Kay, is that I have to tell the whole story. Your fear of what others might think when I talk about your speaking to apparitions and so on has to be dissipated. She said, I trust you completely. Tell it as you will. And this is the result. It's called A Promise is a Promise, an almost unbelievable story of a mother's unconditional love and what it can teach us. And I asked my wife, my dear wife, who has birthed 7 children, to write a mother's perspective. And she wrote a beautiful chapter in here. And we also included photographs of Kay and Eduardo before the coma and after. And in my heart, I believe this is unconditional love in action. Very much like Mother Teresa sees Jesus Christ in all of his distressing disguises, I believe that Kay's work with Eduarda teaches us about a full measure of unconditional love. And that Eduarda made the choice, as the Blessed Mother told her. When Kay said, well, did she have a choice to do this? And she said, absolutely. And she's teaching compassion. And as I speak about it here, and as I speak about it on these tapes, and people listen to it, and people go out and purchase this book, and the money goes to Kay and Eduarda, I believe that what is happening is that she is teaching us compassion, which is the cornerstone of unconditional love. And she's doing her work through me, through you who are listening, for those of you who purchase A Promise is a Promise, and give it away as gifts to others who have demonstrated unconditional love. As Kay says, it's not if she will wake up, but when there's enough compassion in the world, her work will be completed, and she will either awaken or God will take her with her. And that's unconditional love. There's no better example of it that I know. Thank you very much.
This is the end of side 8. Side 7 is already queued up for your next listening.